I'm unafflicted by my actions. Suffering is the result of a gain. Victory at the cost of pain. Like a freight train, you're tied to the tracks. No way to escape, there's no coming back. You're in my way, and I haven't got the time today. Best you walk away. And if you fight another day. Freak out, freak out, have we got a show for you today? I am crazy bananas excited because we are going to talk about my favorite people. We're going to talk about Kevin Steen, now Kevin Owens. We're going to talk about Adam Cole. We're going to talk about the Young Bucks and Chris Walder. If you don't like that, you can get off my moon condo right now.
Fight, Walder, fight. Fight, Walder, fight.
It is Chris Walder, as you heard, and I am the guy who does the Randy Savage voice, James Borbath. We are excited today. We do have a super show for you, and the reason why we're talking about all those people, we have a guest, Chris Walder. He is the voice of Ring of Honor. He's when Steve Corino joined the program. I'm very excited about this.
Yeah, as you should be, because he also has a close relationship with your boy, Kevin Owens, now.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about that during the interview, of course.
Actually, we recorded this interview literally hours before Kevin Owens debuted in NXT. And my God, if you know Kevin Steen and you're familiar with his work, this was a debut made out of heaven for Kevin Steen.
You must have been fanboying the entire time.
I've watched it four times, the match. CJ Parker ends up splitting open Kevin Owens. He bleeds. I have, in fact, invented a whole new term based on this whole thing, Chris Walder.
What is it?
It is called the wrestling hat trick. You bleed, you win, and you have a heel turn. And that is the wrestling hat trick. Congratulations, Kevin Owens, the first man to ever earn the wrestling hat trick. Although I believe Steve Austin did the same thing.
Yes, Austin had one, yeah.
Yeah, but, the term wasn't invented back then, so I don't think it counts.
Big Show can only hit one of the three every time he does it, unfortunately.
And I'm going to tell you, NXT has had some big stars come in, and obviously Finn Balor and Hideo Itami, those guys, Kenta and Prince Devitt, but Kevin Steen entered that place in a whole different way. He felt like a top star in how they build him coming in. He came in like a top star. And I think he instantly in one night has become the top heel in NXT now.
Well, yeah, especially with the way it ended and the opening match of that card. The reaction he got from the fans. Obviously, a lot of smart IWC fans who have seen his work prior to NXT. And then for him to win the match in the fashion that he did, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better debut.
It was awesome, and, it was great. And I want to get to our interview with Steve Corino off the top, and we'll talk all about what happened on NXT with Kevin's debut and everything else that happened on that show. Basically, if you watch that, I don't know why you'd want to watch TLC on Sunday. We'll get into that after our interview with Steve Corino. We talk with him about his relationship, obviously, with Kevin Steen, now Kevin Owens. And all that's been going on for ROH this year, and it's been a big year. We've had the pleasure of having many guests from their promotion on the show, and it's been a big year for ROH. And we also reflect back on Final Battle, and I guess we'll get our thoughts on that on the other side of this interview, Chris Walder, because that show happened this week, too. Wrestling's supposed to be in a downtime. What's going on? We've got podcasts out the yin-yang. We got crazy matches going down. It's supposed to be winding down. It's Christmas season. What's going on?
Apparently only the downtime applies to World Wrestling Entertainment, because everyone else seems to be having a really good, you know, pay-per-views, good showings, good matches. But don't worry, everyone. We're going to poop on WWE and TLC later in the show. But for right now, it's time to interview Steve Corino.
It is our pleasure to welcome in one of the voices of Ring of Honor Wrestling, who just got finished with Final Battle and are pretty much done for the year of 2014. And to reflect back on that event and 2014 as a whole for Ring of Honor, we are pleased to be joined by the one and only Steve Corino. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's been a big year for the company, and we'll get into all of that. But one of the things I want to get into off the top, and we had tried to hook up in September, and it didn't come together. I wanted to talk to you at that time about Kevin Steen and his whole departure from the company, and the fact that he chose you to be his final wrestling match. Just your thoughts on Kevin's exit from the company and your role in that.
I thought it was awesome because, you know, once he knew that he was going and the offer was on the table, he could have just, you know, said I quit or, you know, sat out the rest of his contract. But he went in there and, you know, him and the office had so much respect for each other that he was allowed to pick who he wanted to wrestle. And I was surprised that he picked me because, you know, I'm basically done wrestling in ROH. I've moved to another part of, you know, my career at commentating. So I wasn't prepared for, you know, being asked to do that style match in an ROH ring yet, but it was such an honor, man. And, you know, it's only a couple hours away. I'm going to be sitting in my living room with my television on, and I'm going to get to watch my buddy debut at NXT. So it's a cool moment.
Yeah, we are taping this just literally hours before the debut of some guy named Kevin Owens in NXT, and I'm very excited for Kevin, and I got the chance to meet him back in May when you guys were up in Toronto for the show with New Japan, and then again got to meet him in Hamilton. He was doing an independent show, and just such a great guy. I've talked with many people about him, and everyone has positive things to say. I've talked to Adam Cole, who's a good friend of his. Michael Bennett had nothing but kind things to say about him. And I just can't find a person in the wrestling business that has a bad thing to say about Kevin Steen. Other than maybe some guy named Jim Cornette. He might have a few words. But other than that, pretty clean track record.
Right. Well, you only have one enemy in the whole wrestling business. That's a pretty good reputation. So, yeah, man, Kevin's just a good dude. He always has a... known him 10 years. He was a kid when I met him in Montreal, and the first time we wrestled, I think it was Quebec City. It was the first time we wrestled, and I just saw like a passion that he had, him and Generico, and for him to have that moment where he finally gets signed after watching so many guys, you know, go, and all on his level, the Daniel Bryans and the Cesaros and Seth Rollins's and, you know, CM Punk's, they were all at his level. You know, they were all even, and, you know, you just wanted to know, man, when is it going to be his time? And it finally is now, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And just one thing, too, the speech he gave after the match you guys had, that was very touching, what he had to say about you. I was touched as just a fan watching it. I can't imagine how you felt about it.
Oh, you know, it's so cool because, you know, he's my real-life buddy, and we've had the last 4 years were basically me and him, and, you know, you throw in a Generico and a Cabana and, you know, in a Jimmy Jacobs, and you get real heightened. He's just a terrific human being, awesome father, and, you know, it's the old saying, sometimes good things happen to good people, and that's catch.
I wholeheartedly agree, and let's move on now to Ring of Honor, and Your role with the company as a color commentator, you know, you're a sports fan, so you understand this analogy. Sometimes, you know, someone's great at pro wrestling or like at a pro sport, and then they step into the commentary booth and it doesn't happen. Like Joe Montana with football is a good example. You know, was a great quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. As a broadcaster, it didn't work out. For you, how was making that transition from a professional wrestler to a broadcaster, and who first approached you about the idea of you doing it, or was it something you came up with on your own?
No, I've always wanted to do it, and I'm like one of those, you know, entertaining athletes that I always try and think of what's going to be next. You know, once I'm in the chapter that I'm in right now, I'm always thinking, okay, what next? You have a back up plan. And for me, commentating or managing was the two. You know, I knew I could only wrestle, you know, at a higher rate for only so long. And when it was time to go, it's time to go. So you know, when there was a time when Sinclair Broadcasting bought Ring of Honor, where I had approached Jim Cornette about it, and he's like, no, and you know, I had heard that like he didn't want me on television because of my scars, and you know, I disagree with that, but if it's true, you know, it's his opinion. You know, he was running the show. So then in 2012, I was still the ROH tag champion. I got hurt in a match with Jay Briscoe and, you know, banged up my ribs pretty much. And like, at that point, I said, man, I've had enough. I can't take beating anymore. And it just so happened that it was at the right time to approach the office again about being an announcer. And I just said, if it ever comes up, I'd be interested. And that quick it was. Hey, I think we have a spot for you. And this all came in. It was still 6 months before, oh, maybe even more, you know, 9 months before I took over full time. So it wasn't overnight, but it was something that I always, always wanted to do.
Yeah, and one of the things, I had had a brief conversation with you on Twitter, and I'd asked you, in listening to your work, I instantly thought of one person, and I wondered if it was an influence for you. And you confirmed it, and it was Bobby the Brain Heenan. And I think, you know, for younger fans who aren't familiar with Bobby the Brain Heenan, I think a lot of the stuff you do reminds me of the stuff that Bobby the Brain Heenan did back in the 80s on WWE and commentary. And I find it absolutely funny. For instance, Final Battle, there was a shout-out to Kevin from Orlando. I thought that was fantastic.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I try to be different than whatever everybody else is in wrestling, whether it be JBL or Lawler or Taz. I want to be something different. I want to be, you know, anything could come out of my mouth at any time, but I still get to, you know, talk about matches, and, you know, I have personal feelings towards some baby faces, and I love some heels, and sometimes, like, you know, like, I can over-love Adam Cole. Like, nobody on TV does that. Like, it's almost creepy, some of the things that I say about Adam Cole during a match. And then, on the other hand, like, I love ACH and Cedric Alexander, so I'm not your stereotypical, like, heel announcer, even though, like, I have all those tendencies. But he was so, so influential, because he basically, especially watching it back now, is first thing that came to his mind, he said, and he also had Gorilla Monsoon next to him, and Gorilla Monsoon was so underrated. And, you know, Gorilla set him up for a lot of these lines. They knew each other so well. And that's how me and Kevin Kelly are. He knows my humor. He knows when I need to be serious, when I need to joke around, when I need to feel something. And he sets me up, and it's perfect. And, I couldn't have a better mentor.
And I was going to lead into the fact that you work with Kevin Kelly. I think for people who aren't familiar with ROH and aren't familiar with things, people remember Kevin Kelly as the guy who was kind of holding the microphone for The Rock a lot of the times. And I think, you know, when you experience his work at ROH and what he's doing there, he's so much more than that. And I think he might not get the credit that he deserves when we get into these conversations about announcers and how good they are and stuff like that. I really think the two of you combined have made a very great team together.
Oh, well, thank you. I have such a blast, and I think if he was never given the opportunity to have, like, a partner in WWE, he's always the backstage interviewer or, you know, Shotgun Saturday night. He never really got to have somebody with him, you know, all the time. Lawler, you know, he's been with Jim Ross or Michael Cole for so long, and Heenan was with Gorilla, and Ventura was with Vince, and, you know, you become like almost one, and he never had that chance in WWE, and I think that's one of the reasons he's so underrated.
And that's one of the things, when you talk about the WWE product right now, a lot of people are down on the commentary, and they're not fans of it, but I think what you guys are doing is fantastic with ROH, and it's much different from that, but I wanted to kind of get in the nuts and bolts of it, because when anyone talks about WWE commentary, invariably it is brought up that there is a man in the headset named Vince McMahon talking to these guys and working with them as they're commentating. How does the situation work with ROH? Do you guys have people in your ears, or are you guys doing it on the fly? How does it work?
Doing it on the fly. Every once in a while we'll get a, hey, can't say that, or pitch the break, but that's about it. We have a real lax you know, Booker. You know, he believes in Kevin and myself, so he lets us go. He'll stop me if I'm going too far on something, or you know, sometimes I go off on a tangent, he gets me back, but it's rare because I think he believes in what me and Kevin are getting. I'm sure Kevin never gets any word like that, but, you know, Hunter knows what he wants, and it's so cool that he trusts us enough to let us say what we want. It would be scary for me to have Vince in my ear every Monday night. I mean, I'd love the paycheck, but, you know, I like being me. I like the system that we have, and, you know, as long as I don't say these like 37 words that, you know, you're not allowed to say on broadcast TV, you know, they're very open to what I do, and I love it.
Yeah, and I think some of the stuff you do is great, and you know, the stuff you talk about going over the top for Adam Cole, but I personally say keep doing it. I think it's absolutely hilarious, and you know, we've had Adam on the show a couple times. If he really isn't answering your text, we can help you out. I mean, next time he's on, we'll help you out. We'll get him to text you or something.
And it's, you know, it's so creepy that it's something like, can you imagine, like, on the feedback on WWE if JBL was doing this to somebody? You know, it's what makes it fun and the openness that I have in ROH. But yeah, could you imagine if, like, you know, JBL had this obsession of Dolph Ziggler? It'd be downright creepy, right? And that's the vibe I want to give off, is let's make it as creepy as possible that, like, people, they get a chuckle out of it, but they're both like, or they're like, man, what's wrong with that guy? Like, he loves Adam Cole.
Yeah, but it's great. I am with you on Adam Cole. I think he's a tremendous talent, and maybe that's how we'll dive into talking about Final Battle. His matchup with Jay Briscoe, we haven't seen a match like that in quite some time, and it was very interesting to see it, and I thought it came off fairly well. And I was personally concerned as a Ring of Honor fan, having seen their match around WrestleMania with the Ladder War. I'm like, how on earth are these two guys going to top this? And you know what? It was a different match, and I think they did a very good job in matching what they put into that match from WrestleMania weekend.
I agree. It was a little different. You could feel more hatred in the tense. You know, the intensity now is, you know, the roles reversed. You know, Cole was the challenger, Briscoe the champion, and it had such a great backstory to it. So when they went out there and they just beat each other half to death, it was scary. You know, those are my buddies. I don't want to see them, you know, beat each other up so bad like that. But it was absolutely amazing, and you know, as much as I want to see the championship back on Adam Cole, I think Jake Briscoe winning was big for his legacy, being a two-time champion, and it, you know, he needs a couple big wins, and he just got a huge one over the guy that's been a thorn in his side for a year and a half. So I'm excited to see Jake Briscoe world champion in 2015. He's gonna just keep impressing people, man. He's so good.
Yeah, and he's been a long stay with the company, literally from practically, I think actually from day one, right?
At day one, yeah, he was on the first show.
Yeah, so I mean, he's a great guy who has put in his dues for that company. There's no question about it. And the thing I like about ROH, for the most part, that ROH title is treated so strongly in terms of wrestling booking and stuff like that. Like, Jay Briscoe is only the second guy to hold the title two times. I mean, when you look at, like, WWE, for an example, who isn't a guy who hasn't held the title on the WWE roster? It seems like it happens right away for some people. And I think in ROH, titles, they matter and they mean something. And, you know, given the way that other company is thinking, I think older fans and maybe some younger fans appreciate that these titles actually mean something.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's the start of Ring of Honor, whether it's been Gabe Sapolsky or Adam Pearce, whoever was at the helm booking, you know, that they made sure that the ROH World title was what everybody eventually wanted. You know, that showed that you were the best in Ring of Honor. And then when Hunter Johnson took over. He made the title just as important as the previous two bookers, and I think that's what keeps it going. But you got to remember, we don't have the glitz and the glamour and the exposure of the WWE where they can rely on entertainment. We have to be a little bit different. We have to make sure that, you know, people that tune into our television show look at the TV and they go, okay, what are these guys doing? Oh, they all want this, you know, world title that means so much. And you hear that term Brock get thrown around all the time about a title. And I disagree so much, because you can argue that anything in wrestling is a prop. You know, we all use something to, you know, get our point over. Yeah, but to the fans that are watching, the title is, you know, what they're, oh, okay, I'm watching to, you know, see who's going to be the next champion. And when I started watching wrestling, Ric Flair was the NWA world champion, and, you know, everybody, whether he'd be in Georgia or Portland or Texas or Florida, everybody wanted the championship, the NWA world heavyweight title, and you go, wow, that guy must be the best. Same thing with the ROH title. It's looked upon as the best wrestler has the championship and everybody wants them, so it's easy for people turning it on the TV for the first time.
Yeah, and you see it when you go to wrestling events and you see, like, signings and stuff like that. A guy who has a title belt, what's the first thing fans want to do? They want to get a picture with the belt, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, it's recognized, like, oh, that guy must be the best.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be, because it's very easy for fans to get behind that before they even know the character. So, you know, Hunter and Gabe and Adam Pearce have done just a phenomenal job of, you know, keeping that as the centerpiece.
Getting back to Final Battle, we saw two great tag matches on that show. Red Dragon defended their titles against the Time Splitters. The Young Bucks win that six-man tag. And I, again, like Adam Cole, you were a big fan of the Young Bucks, so am I. Gun to your head, better tag team, Young Bucks or Red Dragon?
You know what, man? If you were to ask me that this time last year, I'd tell you Young Bucks without a doubt. You can't go wrong. You know, if you had 50% of people saying Young Bucks and 50% of people saying Red Dragon, neither one of them be wrong. And it's even better when they're together. That, oh man, they put on these phenomenal matches, and they're definitely 1 and 2. And I love tag team wrestling. I always have. It's my favorite, even though, you know, I've been pushed as a single so much in my career. Like, tag teaming is the greatest part of a wrestling match for me. So, like, right now, you've got these great teams, Red Dragon, Young Bucks, Bullet Club. You know, I watch WWE, and you see the Usos and Stardust and Goldust, and you think, man, these guys are real teams. You know, I know they got the hoods on, but the Matadors are, you know, good team, bad gimmick, good team. Back to, you know, ROH, the Briscoes. How about, like, Seidel and ACH for the first time, the Addiction? Tag team wrestling in the whole wrestling industry is hot right now, man. I love it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there became this stigma about tag team wrestling. It was the old, no one wanted to be the Marty Jannetty to the Shawn Michaels, and I think people were a little bit hesitant to be part of tag teams because of that fact, because it always seemed like a company would invariably pick one guy over the other once the tag team was done, and that maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong in this, but maybe that took people away from wanting to be a part of tag team wrestling. A lot of the great tag teams we're talking about now are brothers. I mean, they're not going to turn on each other, most likely, whereas when it's two guys just put together, there's a lot of ego and tension involved in that.
I don't know if anybody worries about being the Marty, though it's funny that it's a wrestling term, and, you know, you could really start an argument in a car with your tag team partner by calling them the Marty, and it's funny, though. But I don't think anybody thinks of that as they're going into a tag team, like, oh, okay, you're going to be the Sean, I'll be the Marty. And especially with the good tag teams, I don't think Kyle's thinking singles right now. I don't think Bobby Fish is thinking singles. They're thinking, let's be the best tag team that we can in Ring of Honor in the world. And the Bucks, you know, they probably one day want to wrestle singles, but right now, why ruin it when you're, like, the most exciting tag team in the world? So I just think more guys are getting more comfortable with being you know, a tag team partner as opposed to a singles.
Yeah, and ROH, I think part of why it works so well in ROH is because the tag team belts are treated with reverence and with respect. We had a ROH pay-per-view close with a tag team title match. I mean, you know, you wouldn't see that in WWE. I mean, no offense to the Usos or Stardust and Goldust, they're not putting the tag team titles on last in WWE. That's not happening.
No, and that's just not their formula, you know, and that's what makes WWE and ROH different. You got the big, huge corporate, you know, and then you have us. It's a way cleaner ECW, you know. Back in the day, you're always the guy that, you know, not first, maybe sometimes second, maybe not second, and then, you know, you're the hardest working crew, and, you know, I'm proud of each and every one of these guys.
Yeah, and we've had Adam Cole on a couple of times, as I mentioned earlier, and he talks so much about ROH being that team environment and everyone working together and striving for collective goals. And obviously for 2014, this has been a big year for ROH. The partnership with New Japan, I think, has been a big deal for the company. Also getting on live pay-per-view. And now, you know, already announced you guys are going to be doing it again in March. And these are big steps for the company to take.
Yeah, huge steps. And, you know, I think Sinclair Broadcasting recognizes that the brand ROH has got some steam behind it. You know, let's strike while it's hot. And, you know, traditional pay-per-view is always a step forward, and I think we've done a great job of it with Best in the World and now Final Battle, and, you know, heading into Las Vegas. It doesn't have to be every month. It, you know, it can be 3-4 times a year, and I think people will see it as, oh, here's an alternative, let me check this out. And, yeah, so it's been big in 2015. It's just getting bigger, newer television stations that Sinclair Broadcasting buying, so that it's more of a open market for us, a little syndication or a debuting in Atlanta if we haven't already. So it's a good time to be an ROH fan. I feel, like, lucky that I'm still here after all this time and, you know, riding this real cool wave.
Yeah, and you have had two long different stints with the company. I wonder, aside from the obvious, which is Sinclair Broadcasting owning it, what else is different about the company from the ROH of today to the ROH that you first came into?
Oh, it was very different. You know, the first ROH was in the office of RF Videos. And, you know, I have no idea that this was like what Gabe and Doug and Rob saw of it in 2002, you know, that it would be what it is 2014. And it's just the evolution of the business. And, you know, Sinclair Broadcasting came about at the right time and gave us a spot on, you know, their television stations. And, you know, ROH isn't what it was in 2002. It's now a television product, and a weekly television product that's very entertaining, gives a lot of wrestling. So, it just keeps evolving, man, you know, and going in a great direction.
And one of the things, you have been a guy, we talked about your relationship with Kevin Steen, but there's a lot of guys that you have played a mentor role to, and I wonder, how much involved do you get in the younger talent that's coming into ROH? Is that just something that naturally comes to you, or are you literally taking a role in that?
No, I never, like, interject my two cents unless I'm asked. And, you know, there's a couple guys that always come and ask me, you know, whether to, you know, if they have ideas or, you know, what they think, or if I could, you know, throw in a couple words of advice there. And that's cool, but it's definitely not an official role. And for the guys just coming in, I try to make it as easy as possible for them. They don't have to walk on eggshells like they do in other locker rooms and worry about, man, whose hand do I got to shake, or I'm going to catch heat, or, you know, we try and have a very, very low-key locker room. So that, like, people, guys, you know, they're worried about getting a job. We don't want them worried about, like, who they got heat with in the locker room, because it's just stupid.
Absolutely. I mean, when you hear some of the stories, it's kind of, it's a little bit juvenile, to be quite frank, and it should all be about everybody working hard and just trying to put on the best show you can. And I think you get that from ROH a lot of the times. One of the things, though, that we've talked about, you are this color commentator, and you've set aside the wrestling, but BJ Whitmer keeps coming and getting in your face, and this keeps becoming a recurring theme. Is this going to have some kind of conclusion, or are you going to stay firm in your broadcast chair?
I am staying firm in my broadcast chair. Like, he's not supposed to do what he does. He does it to, you know, get a rise, get a reaction. I don't know if he thinks, like, maybe one day I'll wrestle him or you know, get out of the booth. I'm very, very comfortable in the booth. And I'm not interested in wrestling him. I'm not interested in wrestling there. You know, I love being there with Kevin Kelly and calling the action. And that's what I want to do right now. I don't want to be the guy getting hurt. I want to be the guy calling about somebody getting hurt. So, yeah, there's going to be no BJ match. He's barking up the wrong tree and it's wasting everybody's time.
Yeah, because, you know, it is a lot easier sitting there and calling the action than actually doing it, and no better person to know that than yourself, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know what, like, I don't, the Kevin match was the best way for me to go out, and that's the way I want it to be.
Yeah, and it was a great way to go out, too, because I think it was just a really nice ending to the story for Kevin, and, you know, with what he said and what you've meant to his career, it seemed a fitting one for him. And obviously, at the end of the day, it was what he wanted. So he got to go out the way he wanted. And not many people get to do that in wrestling when they leave any company, where they can say, this is how I want to go out. This is it. Here it is. This is what I'm doing. I mean, that's a very small list.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was a cool moment to be there in Dearborn, Michigan with all the fans, and you know, he didn't know he was going to get the little celebration at the end, and, you know, Kevin's very humble, so it was one of those things where, like, you know, you could tell he was embarrassed and off his game, and it was cool.
Yeah, one of those matches, it wasn't a match with you, but I think one of the matches he had, either the one with Tommaso or the other one he had, he said that he didn't want to be the last match on the card. He didn't feel that he deserved that. And I, as a fan of Kevin Steen and as a fan of ROH, I'm like, are you serious? Who would want to follow Kevin Steen on his way out the door? I don't know a wrestler that would want to have to do that.
He fought it tooth and nail all day in Dearborn that he did not want to be the main event. And Hunter finally said, well, it's not your call. You got everything else. You're going. Laugh. So it was, you know, it was one of those things. But you know, Kevin being humble and just that was one of the reasons. You know, that was one of the things.
And where do you see things going for ROH in 2015? Because obviously, the company's made a lot of big steps this year. Saw a lot of talent come in and out of the company. With AJ Styles, Chris Hero had come in at the beginning of 2014. Christopher Daniels back with ROH. Just a lot of names coming and going. And where do you see it heading? Because I know there on the internet today there was rumors of someone else coming. I don't think we can talk about that yet, but it certainly seems like ROH is heading in the right direction.
Oh, it's definitely heading in the right direction. It's getting bigger and bigger, you know, and with the veterans that came back and guys that are about to, you know, make a huge impact. Hanson's already starting, you know, Will Ferrara, you know, Moose, you know, we got a lot of young guys coming up through the ROH dojo and these tryout camps. You always see guys that are ready to take it to the next level. And, you know, it's just going to get better and better. And I love the veterans in Ring of Honor because they want the young guys to be so good so that there's even more fresh matches. So it's going to be 2015, it's very cliche, it's probably going to be our best year.
And, you know, that's kind of been the legacy of this company, too, because obviously people are well aware of how many people this company has placed in the WWE, be it Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Claudio Castagnoli, now Antonio Cesaro, on and on and on. And I think one of the great things about ROH is they've always been able to somehow keep the train moving and find young talent and constantly that turnover. I don't mean this as an insult at all, but it's almost like a college program where, you know, your stars go off to go to the NBA and now you got to find some new ones. And ROH seems to be very good at doing that constantly year after year. And one of the things that's done every year, the top prospects tournament, that's one of the things that ROH does that I think is a great launching pad for some of these young talents.
Oh, you're right, and you know, ROH is a great spot for a guy to, you know, his ultimate goal, and I'm sure everybody's ultimate goal is to be that main event of WrestleMania, get there and make the huge money and, you know, be the global superstar that the WWE allows you to be. But, you know, and Ring of Honor has done such a great job of, you know, almost producing these guys for NXT. And I think they know that. They know that, like, this is a great stop for them on their way to bigger and better things. And we just love when a guy goes off on bigger and better things. And because it looks good on Ring of Honor. They're like, oh, wow, that's where CM Punk wrestled. And that's where Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have all wrestled. And, you know, you look in the Mercury and Noble, oh my goodness, Jamie Noble, that's former ROH world champion. So I think fans that like the product never look at it as a bad thing that somebody's going to the WWE.
No, it's actually, it's when used correctly by ROH, and I think they do, it's an incredible drawing card for you guys to kind of say, well, you know what, those guys you're watching in WWE, if you're not happy with them, probably the next set of guys are probably some of them are going to come from this roster here, and you can get to know them before they get there. And I think that's an appealing thing, especially for hardcore wrestling fans, which ROH, a lot of hardcore wrestling fans, it appeals to them. It is their cup of tea, so to speak.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you're going to get to see guys here that may main event WrestleMania 5. So it's a great company to watch. It's a great style of professional wrestling, and man, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. You know, you got WWE and NXT and now TNA back on their new channel, Lucha Underground. You have local indies that have television. It's so easy to find on the internet, and of course you got Ring of Honor. So it's a great time to be a professional wrestling fan because you get to see so much great and different action.
Yeah, it's been just a pleasure talking with you, and I enjoy what you're doing with Kevin Kelly immensely. I think you're doing a great job, and there is rarely a time when I watch an ROH show and Steve Corino has not made me laugh at least once or twice during the time I'm watching, and it's becoming a constant theme, and I thank you for it because I think it's different, and I'm a person who I went to school for broadcast journalism and stuff like that, so when I hear good commentary, that's part of what I love about professional wrestling, because I think really when you have good commentary, that's part of what makes a great match, and ROH has certainly had some great matches. I guess one last thing before I let you go, ROH has it up on their site right now. Best match of the year for ROH, it's a hard question, and I don't know what the answer will be from you, but I know I had about four or five that I was like, it could be this one, it could be that one. Do you have one that springs to your mind right away?
I do. I think my favorite match of the year, and you know, I'll go public with this, what I voted for, was Jay Lethal and ACH 30-minute draw. I thought that was by far the best match in ROH, but like, there were so many, whether it be, you know, I love Cedric and Roddy from Best in the World or Toronto. It was one of the pay per views where they did the submission match. And
yeah, it was in Toronto because I was there.
Yeah, in Toronto, and you know, there, anytime the Briscoes are out there, the Bucks and Red Dragon. I mean, there are so many great matches that, you know, it's hard. It's really hard. So I went with ACH and Jay Lethal. But once again, anybody can say what they like because they're probably right. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, we won't tell Adam Cole that you didn't mention one of his matches, by the way.
All of his matches, I mean.
Yeah. And on that note, Steve Corino, we thank you for being with us. He loves Adam Cole. I love Adam Cole. And We're not going to apologize for that, because Adam Cole, he's a pretty good professional wrestler. But you, sir, are a pretty good wrestling commentator, and we thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
This is former Ring of Honor World Champion Adam Cole, baby, and you're listening to Condo on the Moon Podcast.
There it was, Steve Corino taking us behind the scenes a little bit with how ROH does their stuff and his work with Kevin Kelly on all of their shows, and just talking about all great things. We love Adam Cole. You could accuse me of loving Adam Cole. Steve Corino loves Adam Cole just as much as me, if not more.
Well, I love Adam Cole, too. Don't leave me out of this.
I don't think you love him as much as us. I really don't. You definitely don't love the Young Bucks as much as me and Steve Corino.
I think it's impossible to love them as much as you do.
No, it really is. It's kind of hard. It's me, Kevin Steen, Steve Corino. Like, we're the top three. After that, I don't know who the Young Buck fans are out there, but hey.
I think they were live tweeting the NXT show last night.
They kind of were. They were having fun. Kevin Steen got a tweet from The Rock congratulating him on his debut. And Nick Jackson complained that The Rock always no-sells his tweets and never responds.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, Rocky Maivia for you.
Yeah. You know, that Rock guy, he's got kind of famous. But that is kind of nuts. Like, that kind of tells you where Kevin Steen is at and why it's different. People like Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock are tweeting at Kevin Steen.
He's worth the time, man. He's going to be a huge star for this company. And, we could say that about a couple of other guys, too. But there's something about Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens, that kind of makes him stand out from the herd. His look, his style, his attitude. And if WWE books him correctly, which so far so good based off of NXT or Evolution, the future is extremely, extremely bright.
Hey, we're going to say a lot of bad things about the WWE in this program when we get to talking about TLC and everything else. The Kevin Steen / Owens debut, everything about this has been done perfectly. They have done a magnificent, magnificent job. Why they can't do this with everything else and everyone else, I have no idea. Part of it is Kevin's really talented, but I think it's unfair to say other people that haven't been able to get over with the WWE aren't maybe not as talented as Kevin, but pretty damn close. I mean, to be in the WWE at all, you have to have some element of talent, unless your name is Cameron or a few other people. But that said, I mean, they've just got it totally right with Kevin Steen, and just little things like fate with him ending up bloody in that match and all that. It was just kind of, everything kind of fell in the way that I felt. If you didn't know who Kevin Steen was, in one night you got encapsulated what Kevin Steen is capable of.
I have this gut feeling, and just the way that NXT went off the air, and all of these talks about Sami Zayn heading up to the main roster sooner rather than later, there's upcoming NXT tapings. I have, maybe Sami Zayn drops the NXT championship over these next 4 weeks. It would not shock me in the slightest.
To Kevin Owens?
Maybe to Kevin Owens. What kind of a deal that would be, eh?
That would be shocking, but it seems very clear that Triple H is on board with Kevin Owens. It seems very clear that Kevin Owens is coming into this. I mean, his character has a huge chip on his shoulder. I think the real guy does, too. And I think it's the perfect marriage of reality and character. I mean, the way he started that match against CJ Parker, my God, CJ Parker got hit with a freight train, two clotheslines that were as stiff as hell, and then Kevin Steen, we did save one move from the Kevin Steen moveset, the cannonball in the corner, still part of the repertoire, and he went to town on CJ Parker, and then took CJ's sign and smashed the living hell out of it.
Hey, I will give WWE credit. They're letting him use most of his moveset. The only glaring omission here is the package pile driver.
No, Seg 5 either. We're not using Brock Lesnar's F5.
Yeah, but I mean, like, from his basic arsenal of moves, not like his specials or anything. Like, he still does the suplex into his knee, and then his finisher now looks like it's going to be that throw-up powerbomb, which he's used for years and years, so I'm cool with that.
And even when he does the attack on Zayn, did the slam on the apron, the powerbomb in the apron. I wonder if we're going to get to see where Kevin Steen runs around all the posts and basically nuts guys. I wonder if we're getting that.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll see. Kevin Steen's moveset is endless, and so is he. And boy, oh boy, he made a big splash on NXT. And I think almost, it's funny, but really overshadowed the fact that Sami Zayn finally won the NXT title.
Yeah, we're talking more so about Owens than Zayn winning, although Zayn, that was quite the moment. It took him, I mean, we've been wanting him to win the NXT championship for a long time now, and to get that moment, they teased that it was going to end similar to how his previous matches had ended with Adrian Neville, who deserves a lot of credit, too. I mean, the crowd was 150% behind Sami Zayn, and that's just...
Oh, yeah.
To how popular he is. Neville's a popular guy, too, although they've been booking him kind of heelish in the past couple of weeks, but still a popular guy with the fans, and Zayn was just on an entirely different level. It was absolutely amazing.
Well, they were teasing a heel turn with Neville, and I think basically what they've done is Neville's kind of gone back to being the good guy, and Kevin Owens has just stepped in and become that monster heel. And it makes sense. I mean, it really does. And to their credit, they did a great job of selling this. Rarely does wrestling ever get me, but they got me last night with that, because they literally did a whole close, the credits went off, and you literally thought that show was over. The
yeah.
only thing that I caught right before it happened, they needed to put a spotlight on the two of them, because obviously the spot was coming, and I saw the spotlight come on, and I go, oh my god, it's going to happen. And sure enough, Kevin Steen, before I could get that out of my mouth, was attacking Sami Zayn and left him for dead. And, you know, if you haven't seen it, on WWE.com, William Regal had comments about the attack, and Regal in storyline is upset about it, because this part is legitimate, but he is the reason Kevin Steen's here. He scouted Kevin Steen, he brought him into the WWE fold, and he is none too happy with one Kevin Steen, so we'll see what that all means. As for the rest of this card, I thought great stuff. Charlotte retained her title against the Boss Lady.
Who deserves a lot of credit. I was sleeping on Sasha Banks before. I am no longer going to be sleeping on that gal. She delivered last night. She held her own with Charlotte. She deserves a pat on the back. I'm very proud of the way she worked.
Yeah, I think she's actually going to get the belt at some point. I don't think they're going to wait till the next taping, whatever that's going to be, which is kind of up in the air, because Triple H always does his conference calls before these shows, and it's kind of up in the air what they're doing next. There's a lot of talk that, you know, well, the next show would logically be around WrestleMania. But do they really have the time and effort to do a show live from California for NXT? And Triple H said he wasn't sure about that. So we'll see. But there's no question, NXT right now is just on a different level. I mean, you had The Ascension, who apparently is on their way to the main roster. They went against Finn Balor and Hideo Itami. Finn Balor's entrance, my God.
it was pretty impressive, and we all kind of figured when he was teasing on the weekly show, he was going to bring something The Ascension had never seen before, and we all pointed to it being his body paint and him coming out with like the teeth on his neck and the predator hair and just the entrance and the lighting and the smoke. It almost kind of reminded me of the Boogeyman in a way. I almost thought it was the Boogeyman for a second, but. It was super cool, and then, you know, Itami bringing back the yellow and the black that he wore over in Japan. It was an underrated match, but which was obviously overshadowed by the main event, but it deserves its due.
No, I'm with you. I think it was a great match. And credit to the Ascension for, like, really selling when Balor came out. They were like, they didn't know what to make of him.
Oh, yeah, and thank God he's going to be wearing his body paint from now on, which is awesome.
Yeah, it looks like it. I mean, Jeff Hardy 2.0 for WWE, and you know, hopefully people aren't wearing his body paint. That was the one thing with Jeff Hardy. Always seemed to get on everyone, and that's one thing I've never been a big fan of the paint jobs.
Well, apparently people were, like, leaving Full Sail to go pick up his new T-shirt, Balor's T-shirt, during the little intermission there before the Divas match, so it's going to get over fast. People love paint, people love masks, and Balor without it is still cool, but with the body paint, I mean, that's going to take him to new levels.
Yeah, and what else happened on this card? Baron Corbin continues to destroy people, and it looks like next up for him, Bull Dempsey. Goodbye, Bull Dempsey. It's not going to go well for you.
But you need to throw someone credible in his path. He's just been squashing kind of the lesser talent.
Well, when the crowd starts to count when your match starts, that's a bit of a problem.
But that's cool, though. It's a good gimmick for him.
It's a good gimmick, but it's a bit of a problem for the believability of this character at some point. Because at some point, someone is going to have to outlast the crowd counting. I don't think Bull Dempsey's that guy, mind you. But at some point, that has to change. We also saw the tag titles defended, and no surprise there. I mean, the Lucha Dragons and Vaudevillains are what they are. To me, I'm not big on either team. I mean,
really?
I know a lot of people like them. I'm not big on either team. I'm sure the Dragons will do well on the next level because they wear masks and they'll sell merch. The Vaudevillains, I just think this gimmick, when it gets to like the main stage, people are not going to buy into it.
It's corny in a way. I think both of them work it very well. It's entertaining to me anyways. I got a kick out of the match last night, although I was a little bit disappointed by the length of the match. It was a lot shorter than I expected it to be. Maybe you didn't need to get Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger, but I guess, you know, they have high hopes for Corbin right now. And you could have easily cut the damn Roman Reigns interview, which is completely unnecessary, but, you know, as we head into WrestleMania season, they want to shove him down our throats every chance they get.
Roman Reigns, the first NXT grad to win the world title. You gotta get that in there.
He's winning at WrestleMania, damn it.
It's gonna happen. I wrote an article about it this week. I mean, it's full steam ahead, and I mean, whether you believe that slammy voting was legit or not, I think it was a clear sign for the WWE either way that full steam ahead, Roman Reigns is taking on Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Buy your tickets now.
Someone actually pointed out on WWE.com that when you were able to vote for each person, there was a line between each name, but there wasn't a line between Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. So it almost makes you think that people who were voting for Daniel Bryan
accidentally voted for Roman Reigns.
Yeah, maybe they think, well, it was legitimate. It was just an error on our part, but technically the votes were there for Reigns. So,
or maybe this was just a ploy by WWE all along. Who knows? The bottom line is I don't care about it, and I think the WWE, the best way to defend the slammy voting, AJ Lee won Diva of the Year. There's no way in hell they wanted that to happen. She was at UFC on the weekend with CM Punk. They wanted no part of AJ coming out in front of that crowd on Monday.
I just don't think anyone else would have been as believable. Maybe Paige, that's the only other Diva that could have deserved it. No one's voting for either of the Bella twins, so it's either Paige or AJ.
And we'll save the rest of this talk for the TLC stuff, but
some
thoughts on AJ, which don't really involve her match at all, but we won't have much to talk about her match, so we'll talk about it then. Anyway, that was pretty much it. Did I miss anything on this card? I don't think I did.
No, Owens, the Dragons, retained. I mean, it was just a really decent card. It's easier to book 2 hours, obviously, and the talent pool right now is like an internet wrestling fan's dream, because everyone, it's basically a pro wrestling guerrilla show now. All of those guys are coming over to NXT and delivering on all cylinders, but, you know, Raw and SmackDown don't have that luxury. You have to book 7 hours of that during the course of a week with NXT, it's like, okay, you have one writer works with Triple H, and you can bust out 2 hours of entertaining television. So it's easier in that sense, and I can understand why everyone loves NXT, but man, it's fun. It makes you remember why you like wrestling in the first place.
And I'll tell you something. Triple H acts totally different when he's down there. I mean, he took a selfie with Kevin Steen. He's making these funny tweets like he's all out of brass rings. Does anyone know where he can get more? Like, I mean, he acts like a different person when he's down in that NXT environment. It's kind of cool to see because I think, you know, Hunter or Triple H or Paul or whatever you want to call him, when he's down there, I think you get a better sense of the guy, the good guy that is Paul Levesque. I mean, CM Punk obviously has his opinions of him, and I'm sure they're valid for various reasons, but there's two sides to any person. There's a good side and a bad side, and Paul does have a good side, and I think you see the best of that good side when he is down there at NXT.
If you want any more indication of that, just go to WWE.com and check out his two-minute package with Corey Graves, someone who revealed last night, of course, that he's going to have to retire as an in-ring competitor only because doctors have warned him about all of his concussions and it could be very serious in the future. Now he's going to be joining the NXT announced team, but last night in that video, Triple H was talking to Graves and he offered him a two-year contract to be an announcer and all the hard work he's done over the past few years, the circumstances that he's under, and, you know, Triple H just talked to him. It was kind of like a mentor-peer kind of relationship, and that's how he is with everybody. He also took another photo with Hideo Itami and Finn Balor while he was decked out in his body paint, so it's kind of like he's one of the boys, and his relationship with all of these young guys and girls right now is awesome, and, I mean, it kind of goes to show that if Triple H ever does get full control of WWE and it's his say and his voice, you know, maybe it'll be more improved than it is right now with Vince.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to talk about that. But apparently, before we get to what I wanted to talk about, Triple H apparently gets the millennials. Vince McMahon, not so much.
There you go.
Yeah, but you mentioned Corey Graves, and I'm glad you brought that up. I'm telling you, I don't know if they've been training him to do this for a while, but night one, first night out of the box, 10 times better than Alex Riley.
Oh my God, Riley was a disaster last night.
He's horrible. He needs to go. Like, now he's making tweets about how he doesn't get to wrestle. Guess what? You sucked as a wrestler. You suck as a commentator. You're basically half of what The Miz is, and I think The Miz sucks.
I can tolerate him doing the pre-shows because I don't watch enough of them anyway to really care. But him as an announcer last night, he was talking about how Hideo Itami and Finn Balor don't even speak English. Like, they speak Gaelic and Japanese, and that's it. I'm like, dude, are you killing me? You've been calling these for the last couple of weeks. You've heard them talk. What are you an idiot?
He just says outlandish, stupid things, and I think he thinks he's trying to be a heel announcer when he does that, but he's actually being stupid.
Yeah.
Like, we had earlier on in the show, we had on Steve Corino. I think Steve Corino does an awesome job.
Agreed.
And he does some of those heel things, and as we talked about in the interview, he's a modern version of what Bobby the Brain Heenan used to do. But Bobby the Brain Heenan was quick-witted, he said things that were funny, and they made sense. Steve Corino does the same kind of thing. Alex Riley doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
He really does need to go. I've tried to defend him in the past, but our evolution was the breaking point with me, and he actually kind of has a similar voice to Corey Graves. I don't think you need both of them there anyway. And with Graves signed on for the next 2 years, put Riley somewhere else. Keep him on the pre-shows. Don't have him at the announce table.
And I'm not a fan of the play-by-play guy either. That Rich Bream or whatever the hell his name
is.
Yeah,
I mean he's tolerable. I mean he's not the greatest. I actually prefer Renee Young more. And I would have liked to see William Regal back there, but I know he's the GM, so...
Yeah, he can't be there now, but...
And they moved up the other guy, the one who does SmackDown now. What's his name?
Yeah, Tom Phillips. He does SmackDown now and does Superstars, and I think he's doing Main Event, too, but, yeah...
He's one of the better ones.
He's eventually going to replace Cole. If nothing changes in their announcing stock, he will be the guy that replaces Cole. There's no question about that.
We'll get a Phillips Renee Young commentary team on Raw in the next 3 years for sure.
Anyway, we kind of did this backwards because we should have done, we should have probably followed up Steve Corino talking about Final Battle. For me, I liked Final Battle. That was a great show. I thought, you know, three really good matches. The venue itself was very interesting. It led to some kooky camera angles. It took me a little while to get into it and used to it, but I did eventually. Obviously, they upgraded their lighting. They upgraded, like, the entrances. Now we're getting video packages for guys like you see in the WWE. It's a process. It takes time for ROH, but they are, it seems, investing in trying to make the production better. The wrestling, it's off the charts. I mean, you saw one heck of a match. We talked about that six-man tag match and said, who's the weak link in that match? And truly, it was. I mean, the Young Bucks were in there with ACH, Cedric Alexander in there with the Addiction. I mean, those six guys put on one hell of a match.
And I got that one right. You did it. You picked against your boys.
I did, because I thought with being with ACH, I didn't think it would work out. And I don't know, it did. The Young Bucks won, and, you know, I'm glad to be wrong. I mean, I was cheering for the Young Bucks, obviously.
Clearly.
Super kick party all over the place here. And then the other two matches that stood out, obviously, Red Dragon, like I was talking with Steve Corino, and Steve Corino made an excellent point. Who's the best tag team in the world? You could flip a coin. On one side, you have the Young Bucks. On the other side, you have Red Dragon. And either way the coin falls, I don't think it's the wrong answer. Red Dragon really put on a tremendous match with the Time Splitters. I thought it was fantastic.
Still can't figure out why they capitalized the D and the R in their name. Do you know about that?
Because they're just trying to make it all one thing, like Red Dragon. Like, it's just, that's it, you know.
I guess it's not as complicated as I thought it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't take it as a big deal. Although when you go to write it, in columns and stuff like that, yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it gets confusing.
But, you know, that said, Red Dragon just doing big things. They are the IWGP Junior Tag Team Champions, still the ROH Tag Team Champions. They had a hell of a 2014, and, you know, so have the Young Bucks. I mean, wrestling everyone under the sun. I mean, I recently just watched a match of theirs. It was on the final independent show that Kevin Steen had done. And they wrestled the Hardy Boys. I mean, what a match.
Was that the one at the baseball stadium?
Yeah, it's just off the charts. And the added bonus of that, if you go look this up on YouTube, Kevin Steen on commentary as well, just to put it over the top.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. You really need to go seek that out. And it's the holiday seasons. Go buy your Young Bucks t-shirts at Pro Wrestling Tees. Whatever. I like the Young Bucks. I think they're great. Nick and Matt, we got to get them on this program.
We really do.
I want that as my birthday present next year. If it hasn't happened by my birthday next year, I'm going to be upset.
Well, we can't have that.
No, I we got to make it happen somehow. I mean, Ring of Honor is here when? In May?
May, yeah, I think so.
Maybe I'll call in some favors. We'll do something if the Young Bucks are there. I don't know.
Another show that me and you have to hit up, buddy.
We got to make it happen. Actually, it's a double shot in Toronto. It's going to be a pay-per-view and a TV taping. I don't know if I'm doing the double shot, but I'm definitely going for the pay-per-view part.
As am I. Also, bringing the wife with me, too. I said so many good things about All-Star Extravaganza. I got her wrestling juices flowing. So
there you go. So
got to bring some more females to these shows, buddy.
Yeah, no kidding. The male-to-female ratio, especially at an ROH show, no offense.
Yeah.
Not that great. Not that great, but I mean, that's true of most wrestling shows. And all that said, you know, although the Shield pack in the women.
That is true. Roman Reigns, love him or hate him, the ladies love him.
All
for sure.
of them, like all three of them, they all have their own separate female fan bases.
Renee Young specifically.
Well, yeah, she's heavily invested in the Dean Ambrose camp. But yeah, actually, speaking of Dean, We're kind of going all over the place this week. Normally, we don't normally go out of our way to encourage you to check out other podcasts, but the interview with him and Chris Jericho, two parts this week on Talk is Jericho, go check it out. Dean Ambrose, such a funny and interesting guy. Like, I really enjoyed the interview he had with Jericho. I found it very interesting, and not in the same vein, but boy, oh boy, a lot like CM Punk in the sense of a cat that really thinks out of the box.
Well, before we forget about it completely, what were your thoughts about the main event with Briscoe and Adam Cole?
That was interesting because we have not seen a match like that in a long time.
Right.
Like, that was ultra violent in some ways. Like, we brought out the thumbtacks, but the big spot, stapling a sign to Briscoe's head, Adam Cole did, and I was just like, it didn't offend me, I wasn't bothered by it, but I was like, wow, we haven't seen one of these in a long time. And it kind of answered the question that I had in my head going into this match, which was, how on earth are they going to top Ladder War, which they had at WrestleMania weekend at their Card of Honor. I didn't know how they were going to top it. They managed a way to find, at least to come on par with it, with the match they had. And, you know, Adam loses, which I think was kind of expected, and now we wonder about Adam's future, and we shall see. Although, the other big news of the week, and we briefly touched on it in the interview with Steve Corino, and I said we couldn't mention it. Literally an hour and a half after I was off the phone with Corino, ROH confirmed Alberto Del Rio is coming to ROH.
And you're not a fan of this.
No, I'm okay with it. I think it's great. And not only that, he's coming to do some tapings with them and some shows with them. He's going to be on the pay-per-view that's coming up in March. I think that's the big story here, that he's not just coming in to do a couple shows. He's actually going to be on their pay-per-view, too.
He's going to be a main roster guy now. Isn't that the way it's going to be? Like, he's actually signed a deal to be an ROH superstar?
No, they've signed him through the pay-per-view.
It's a one-off deal on the pay-per-view?
I don't know. It's just up until the pay-per-view, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Because they need some guys to wrestle, because a majority of their roster will be overseas for the New Japan show. They'll miss the tapings, right?
Yeah, the one show, like their first taping, I think, is January 3rd.
Right.
And then the New Japan show is when? The 4th, right?
4th or 14th, yeah.
No, it's the 4th.
Is it the 4th?
Yeah, because it's something to do with JR's birthday. It's, like, all tied in there.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway. So that taping will be a little thin, but still.
And his name won't be Del Rio. It'll be
Alberto El Patron. Yeah. But no one knows who that is listening to this podcast. They know who Alberto Del Rio is, and no one's suing us. So let's face it. Yeah, that's probably not happening. If Colt Cabana can get away with what he did, I think we're safe from the WWE's wrath. by the way, if we're giving shout-outs to podcasts, Colt Cabana followed up his CM Punk double shot with a really interesting interview with Dr. Tom Pritchard, who worked in WWE developmental for years back when it was called FCW, and that was an interesting chat as well.
You know something that me and you haven't even discussed? CM Punk is a UFC guy.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, that happened too this week, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, on Saturday, the day after our podcast.
Ah, that's right. I remember a very excited text came my way on Facebook from some guy named Chris Walder, saying all it said was CM Punk in UFC, OMG, or something to that effect.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked.
This is crazy on many levels. CM Punk is not Brock Lesnar.
No doubt.
No, but that's the first thing, because all these UFC reporters, it was like, so Brock Lesnar came here and had some... No, CM Punk is not Brock Lesnar. Let's start right there. He isn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the pedigree, the real sports background of Rockies, none of it. I think CM Punk's a real mystery, quite honestly, because we know he trains jiu-jitsu with Henner Gracie, who, I mean, top-level guy, works with Ronda Rousey, not you know, like some bum off the street, married to Eve Torres, for wrestling fans, by the way. But, you know, a top-level guy when it comes to jiu-jitsu. But we really don't know the level Punk is at, because Punk refuses to take belts, which is how they measure you in martial arts like that, and Punk has no interest in that. So is he a blue belt? Is he a white belt? Is he a black belt? Who knows?
We're going in with a completely blank slate here. And you know Dana White's going to book him against someone who has an equal footing as he has, and I think they've even said that before, that they're probably going to find a 0-0, 1-0 guy that they can put against him on pay-per-view. And I can see why some of the fighters, people who do this or have been doing this for a lot longer than Punk, would be upset, because, you know, even Brock Lesnar had to do a little bit of a stint on The Ultimate Fighter. He had to pay his dues. With CM Punk, I think UFC is so desperate for star power right now that throwing him right into the you know, the main event picture, not for a title, but he's going to be booked appropriately on whatever show he appears on, it's because he's going to make UFC a lot of money. And hopefully he doesn't get creamed in his first fight, because it's gonna lose White a lot of dough. So I'm pulling for him. He's a former pro wrestler. You know, we're all in this together, this wrestling community of ours, but I don't have the highest of hopes. I don't think he's ever going to be a champion or anything.
All I'm saying is the hardcore UFC fans can kick the hardcore wrestling fans' butts. It wouldn't be pretty, but let's get a few things out there on the table. One, UFC is going to make this as easy as possible for CM Punk to win. It's in their best interest for him to win. They can't fix the fight, obviously, but they're going to do the best job they can to find someone that he can at least compete with and have a better than average chance of winning. It's in their best interest too. Two, the very few number of fighters that have spoken out against this and have a problem with this, you're dumb people that have been punched in the face too much. Nate Diaz, Ben Askren, you don't get it. Because here's a newsflash for you. CM Punk is more popular than both of them combined, and, by the way, 98% of the UFC roster. It's true. It's damn true. And they should see it as a money-making opportunity. Instead of bashing Punk and being upset with him being there, you should want to be on the card that he's going to be on, because you know how many pay-per-view buys that's going to do? And that's money. And that's being smart. Ben Askren, of course.
Yeah.
Ben Askren, though, in a different league, so obviously that wouldn't happen. But my point is, you know, bashing CM Punk is kind of stupid when you look at it from a business point of view. It's obvious why Dana and Lorenzo did this. It's all about the money, like Vince McMahon likes to say.
Here comes the money! Yeah. Here we go. Money talks. Shane O'Mac for you, buddy.
There you go. I wonder if Shane O'Mac will be at CM Punk's fight. I wonder how many wrestling people will be at this fight, and will any of them be currently employed by the WWE?
By the way, was I the only one of us who popped when Hideo Itami went for the GTS last night?
He teased it, yeah. I wish
he would have landed it.
If they want him to be a babyface, I don't recommend he does that.
Aw, come on. People would love it.
He invented
the move.
Yeah, but I think Punk fans would hate it. I think they would just go ape on it.
Moves are stolen all the time.
They are, but it's different. Like, the issue's red hot right now. Like, do it a year from now. No one will care.
All right, fine.
That's another reason, though,
what I was going to say earlier was that Punk's, you know, he's a superstar right now. His stock has never been higher. And you could even make the argument that he's the biggest name in pro wrestling right now, and he's not even in pro wrestling. So why the hell wouldn't people be excited that he's in UFC?
And credit to Punk. This has been all planned. If you don't think this was all cleverly designed by CM Punk, you don't understand how smart CM Punk is. This was all a designed rollout and a plan, and boy oh boy, he just dropped, I know he doesn't like the term anymore, but he dropped a pipe bomb on the entire world.
I don't know how he's going to top his podcast, but he did with the UFC announcements, so now the only thing he could really say is, I'm joining NASA and I'm going to go off into space or something.
No, I've already said it. He throws his hat in the ring and runs for president in 2016.
Phil Brooks.
Yeah, Phil Brooks and Cole Cabana, vote for them.
AJ Lee, the first lady, my goodness.
Wow. Hey, that actually is not a, America. Get on this. This could actually be appealing for you.
You won't be hearing no scandals with Punk sleeping with a secretary if he has a first lady like that.
Wow, I don't know. Now we're getting really like weird and funny, Chris
Raunchy.
Wilder. But no, I mean, but to bring it back to a serious thing, I don't think anyone knows what to make of this, but the business side of it is simple. This is a license to print money for CM Punk, a license to print money for the UFC. Why on earth would either side not want to do that? It makes sense. I mean, why not roll the dice?
Well, fingers crossed. Let's see how he does in this first fight. I'll certainly be ordering it.
I think everyone will be watching. And the people that say they aren't watching, I think they'll be lying and they'll be watching out of the corner of their eye. I think this is a huge thing. The only person probably not watching, Vince McMahon. He's not watching.
You don't think he's going to watch?
No. Triple H might to watch him get beat up. But Vince isn't watching because that's past Vince's bedtime now, I think.
I love his little one-liner on WWE.com saying, yeah, we wish him like the best of luck in his new gig in UFC or his new endeavor. And it was so cheesy, so corny. Trying to smooth the waters, though, you know, in case Vince ever can get Punk back in WWE. This is the way it works, right? You leave WWE, you go win a couple of titles in UFC, you leave, you come back, and you work a part-time schedule while being WWE champion.
Punk's
following the Lesnar timeline here.
Yeah, but Punk's not winning any titles. I mean, let's be honest. Like, for people who aren't familiar with UFC, either of the weight classes that Punk is considering are two of the toughest in the UFC. Like, the Walter weight division, which he'd have to cut down to 170, which he's not sure he could do, that's the division that GSP was in. He could be coming back in 2015 as well. CM Punk is not beating GSP, not next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. That'll never happen. And then, you know, Robbie Lawler just won the title from Johnny Hendricks. Like those are all tough guys in that division. And then in the middleweight division, I mean, Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman, I mean, the tough guys. CM Punk is going to be an attraction, not a title contender in UFC.
He's not credible because he hasn't fought yet. We need to see him land a couple of punches and maybe pull out a submission or two, an anaconda vice, perhaps?
I don't think so. I don't think we're seeing the GTS either, the Octagon Walder. That's not happening either. But
could see the running knee into the side of the cage, though.
Yeah, that might be. But I don't even think we see that one because someone would move out of the way of that in reality. See, wrestling, we'll talk about it after the podcast. Anyway, we'll see what happens with Punk and obviously got the wife's blessings, and we talked a little bit about AJ Lee, and let's talk a little bit more about her before we get into TLC. The rumors are out there for, what, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth time that she's leaving? Maybe finally they're true this time. I kind of get the impression they might be based on a few things. I mean... We had the, you know, talent is not sexually transmitted. And then I found her speech when she won the Slammy very much almost like a goodbye. And it was kind of a rallying cry for the divas that actually can work in this company to be kind of the successor to what she started.
Well, she set the bar awfully high, and you know, being away from the whole total diva stigma, and I really do feel like he's going to leave. I think this is the perfect time to do so, heading into the new year. I mean, if you lose twice to Nikki Bella, which, I mean, we're going to talk about TLC. I don't see AJ winning the title, which makes it even more surprising, you know, with her possibly leaving, that she actually won Superstar of the Year and then gave that speech. But we've been, of course, like you alluded to, we've been hearing these rumors for months and months and months now. And is she going to leave? You know, maybe she'll work through WrestleMania just to kind of get that little payday, even though it's not really a payday anymore. Who knows what's going through her mind right now? But I'd be sad to see her go, but when someone leaves, it means it's an opportunity for someone else to kind of step out of the shadows. Maybe we get the inevitable Charlotte debut. Maybe she comes up. There's a couple of other girls in NXT that could realistically make an appearance on the main roster. So all is not lost. You know, CM Punk left. People replaced him. So someone's going to replace AJ.
Yeah, but no one is replacing the Stephanie-AJ feud that was going to be one of the like main events of WrestleMania. No one's replacing that, Chris Walder.
Oh, yeah, you've been wanting that for so long, you're not going to get it now.
I know, it's very sad. But in all honesty, and I wrote this in a piece I did on AJ, the moment I heard the CM Punk podcast, the first one, I knew instantly I wasn't getting that match. Because you've got to look at this. I mean, these two women, Stephanie and AJ, I mean, how can they not be on opposite ends of the world, given that their husbands hate each other? It's widely considered that Stephanie also hates Punk. And AJ, before she got involved with Punk, actually loved Stephanie, was to the point of she was such a fangirl for Stephanie, she found it hard to even talk to her. But now that's all had to have changed with everything that's happened. And I just can't imagine those two women stepping in a ring and being able to perform a legitimate wrestling match. I mean, I just can't see it.
It would have probably been one of the most, if not the most, anticipated women's match in WWE history, just because we do know the history there and the conflict between their husbands, but we're not going to get it. I'm disappointed by that, but the beef is still going to be there, and who knows, maybe we'll get it somewhere down the road.
I'm going to be honest with you. It would be the biggest women's feud in the history of this company by miles.
And well, I don't know about that, but...
Oh, no, it would be. It would be by miles, because the amount of storyline that this would have and the amount of backstory that would have, no feud between two divas rivals this in any way, shape, or form. It just doesn't.
Not even, you wouldn't even put Trish and Lita in that category?
No, because it's not the backstory. The backstory is they're actually really good friends and they love each other.
But they had years of on-screen storylines and terrific matches. And
oh, yeah, no doubt. But I think when you look at some of the best wrestling feuds, whatever they are, go back and look. The ones that really, really pop are the ones that actually have a backstory to them. Savage Hogan. They hated each other, then they loved each other behind the scenes. Back and forth. You know, like, you know, Edge and his feud with Matt Hardy. Super hot because of the whole thing with Lita and her involvement. Those kind of feuds, they're on a different level, and I think that's the type of feud you could have had with AJ and Stephanie, and obviously probably won't have now.
Well, at least we have AJ versus Nikki Bella to look forward to.
And Nikki Bella, some advice to her, shut up. In all honesty, shut up. Because she's doing herself no favors by bashing AJ. If AJ is truly on her way out the door, she can say it's storyline and she's following the script, but she's not. And everyone kind of knows she's not. She needs to shut up. She's a dumb, stupid, friggin' girl who, I got news for you, the only reason she has the spot she has is because of who she dates.
Yeah, that's. I was about to say, I'm like, it's nice to be able to say whatever you want and whatever comes to mind when you know you have the protection of being the girlfriend of the top guy in the company.
Well, no, just the stuff she was saying about AJ was stupid. And what I'm referring to, there was this Instagram post, I don't think she took it down, so it's probably still there, where she's kind of just basically slagging AJ Lee for no apparent reason other than, I mean, she said a couple zinger lines at them on television, but, I mean, if she's on her way out the door, what did you expect? One, and two, you're the one who's going to win at the end of the day, so why not just shut up and look like the better person?
Maybe she's trying to draw some heel heat from this?
I don't know, but it's going to backfire on her, because we know what's going to happen, right? This match is going to happen, and I guess we'll dive into TLC now. We know what's going to happen with this match. AJ Lee's going to come out. Nikki's going to come out. they're going to chant CM Punk. And if AJ loses in a similar fashion to how she lost last week, the crowd is going to boo Nikki Bella right out of the building. Normally a good thing when you're a heel, but they're not going to be booing for the reason they should be booing. They're going to be booing because they realize AJ just got screwed in probably her last match in the company, and Nikki Bella was the one who was doing it.
I hate talking about this match because I just hate Nikki Bella. She's improved. I'll give her that. But I mean, she didn't. It's like when you move from like level 1 to level 2. You're still only on level 2, so let's not get carried away.
What?
Yeah?
The only comparable to Nikki Bella where I'll accept that Nikki Bella is better is her own sister. Because her own sister, as bad as Nikki Bella is, Brie Bella is 10 times worse.
The only bright side with Brie is that she has the yes chance with her because of Daniel Bryan. That's it.
Yeah, but I mean, even that, I just think that's cheesy and she's just stealing off her husband. I think it's lame.
Yeah, well, all right. I mean, this is all leading to a Nikki versus Brie feud for the title. We can at least agree on that, right?
Who knows? They kind of just dropped that. I think we're supposed to forget that they were ever mad at each other, aren't we?
I mean, maybe it's just going to turn out to be like the Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt thing where Bryan aligns with Bray and then turns on him, you know, eventually. It was all part of the master plan, right?
Right. I don't know. Maybe. This whole year of Divas action has been a dream, like Dallas.
I never even... I know what you're talking about, but I never actually watched an episode of Dallas.
Yeah, well, they had the whole season. It was a dream. It never happened. So, you know, maybe Trish Stratus will come out and she'll be champion.
I wish WWE in general was just a dream because it's been just so awful.
If it's a dream, it's a nightmare right now.
That's true.
Nothing's going on right for that company. I mean, when you have your developmental system being openly just treated as the better product, something's wrong.
It's very true. NXT, man. WWE, learn from your developmental group because they're doing it right for some reason.
Like, we got memes out there. People are trying to get demoted to the NXT roster. Like,
yeah.
That's what's going on in this world. TLC is this weekend. After what people saw last night, does anybody care?
Like, I certainly don't.
Yeah, and I mean, we will go through this card because Walter's basically forcing me to.
Yep.
But that said, I really, if I missed this on Sunday, I wouldn't care.
Me either. But we're going to watch it because that's what we do.
Not necessarily. I might have a nap. We'll find out if I had a nap. We'll find out if I had a nap last week or next week. But for now, assuming that I will watch this card, what else is on it? I don't even remember because
we had
Slammy Awards going on during the... That's one more rant I'll have before we get to this card. Why on earth are the Slammy Awards always on the go-home show for TLC? You're trying to promote a pay-per-view special event, whatever the hell you call it nowadays in the WWE. Why do we have the Slammys then? Why not just stick them on the first Raw of January? I mean, the year's done. You're not close enough to the Rumble where it matters. Why not put them there?
Or even the show after, the following Monday. You know, I mean, people are going to watch it anyways. It gives you more of a reason to tune in, and you don't have to do all these silly filler awards. Just get to the nitty-gritty. The best, you know, best superstar of the year, best match of the year. Don't give us the most extreme moment and all that crap.
Or you could do, like, New Year's Eve. Like you know, New Year's Eve show, after they do Tribute to the Troops, the next show you do your Slammies and have, like, hey, give the talent a couple weeks off. What a great concept.
That's why I don't care about TLC. They didn't really spend the last couple of weeks, especially the Slammy Awards, to build it properly. And now we're stuck with a bunch of matches while there is potential for there to be some quality bouts. It doesn't matter if you don't have your interest invested, you know? It's like, I don't really care.
Okay, so let's get into this card. I do know one match, and I'm not calling TLC and Stairs, but there is a Stairs match on this card. I do remember that. Big Show versus Eric Rowan. Obviously, Eric Rowan should win this match. If he doesn't, I mean, God almighty, I don't know what goes on in booking in this company, because I am so tired of the Big Show. I'm getting to the point, Big Show is just the same as Kane to me. Both of them. I want them gone. I don't give a damn about them. They mean nothing. They've been turned heel and face so many times, it's so irrelevant, and no one cares. Like, the Big Show on this latest heel turn, did anyone care at all? Really?
Well, we got it anyways.
Oh, I understand that, but what I'm saying is the effectiveness of the heel turn has totally been lost for the Big Show. I mean, look at what happened with Kevin Owens last night. On his first friggin' night, he did a better heel turn than the Big Show, any of his heel turns ever.
Well, it's because he's been turning heel so many damn times. There's even a list on Reddit. I think he's done a heel face switch 13 or 14 times throughout his career. So,
and it's always the same kind of thing. It's kind of a whiny, woe is me Big Show.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no one appreciates me. Yeah, no one appreciates you because you're boring. You're a 500-pound guy who's supposed to be Andre the Giant and is booked like he's a friggin' dancing bear in the circus.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to go with the Big Show. I can't believe I'm saying this. You know what? Now that I think about it, I'm probably going to change my mind like 50 times before the pay-per-view.
This is worse than your pick of Cameron.
And I was right.
Yeah, but that didn't make it a good decision.
I didn't want her to win. I knew she was going to win, and she did win.
Yeah, but it wasn't good. It wasn't best for business.
Well, this isn't best for business either, but Big Show's going to win on Sunday.
All righty, what's next?
We should have probably started with the pre-show. A New Day, or The New Day, or just A New Day, forget. they're going up against Goldust and Stardust.
It's not A New Day. They'll probably lose because that would be the stupidest thing to do. So yeah, give me Goldust and Stardust because The New Day does not have much of a new feel to it to me. The only thing it has is the one thing that I didn't like them doing with Big E. He's doing that preacher voice again, and I hate it.
Yeah, me too, man. But they are still new at the end of the day. Get it? Oh, and they're going to beat Goldust and Stardust because I mean, it's weird to see a tag team feud that doesn't revolve around the titles right now, but it is what it is. They need some pre-show filler. It's better than seeing Fandango fight again. So whoever wins,
is it though? Really?
It is. Fandango's on the next level crap.
You're not into the new and improved Fandango then.
At least before it was tolerable because he had the entrance where you can wave your fingers around. Now it's just like the Spanish mumbo jumbo. I know Fandango means like Spanish dance or something, but he's dancing with a woman who has no rhythm in Rosa Mendez. So I'd rather see Kofi and Xavier and Big E, and they'll defeat the Dust Brothers, and I won't care, because that's what I do these days.
Wow, okay. We covered the pre-show. Is Bunny on the pre-show, or did we miss him?
No bunnies, but we did talk about tag teams. Let's talk about the tag team titles. Miz and Mizdow versus my boys. My boys are back in the title picture, the Usos.
And they actually have an angle going. There's not much I like going on with the WWE right now. I kind of do like this thing with The Miz and Jimmy Uso and his lovely wife, Naomi. I like this, unfortunately. And I think it all works. The only thing that doesn't work about it, we've already set up this great feud for The Miz with Mizdow. Why do we need Jimmy Uso right now? That's my only thing.
Please don't tell me Naomi's going to turn heel and align herself with the Miz and Miz.
Oh, I don't think you can do that with Total Divas. I think that.
But, hey,
that's
you know
out
what?
The window.
No, she's off the show now. Heading into the new season, her and Summer Rae are not part of the cast.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
I guess because they brought Alicia Fox and Paige in, they decided to take two girls out.
Wow.
So when they were shooting the commercials and the previews, Naomi and Summer Rae no longer part of Total Divas. So that would leave the door open. If they wanted to do it, although it would be so stupid because we know Jimmy and Naomi are married.
And on the show, by the way, Total Divas.
Yeah, so, but I think it's a long shot. If it happens, you heard it here first, folks. But The Miz and Mizdow will retain the titles. There's no need to put them on the Usos. So, there you go.
Either that, or you get the breakup, and that is what ends up happening.
With The Miz and Mizdow?
Yeah.
No, too soon.
I don't know if it's too soon. I think people, they want Mizdow in a big way.
But I think, especially because the next couple of weeks, no one's going to be tuning in because it's going to be the holiday.
No, but you set it up for the Rumble, right? Like I think you want to have, you don't want to have another tag team title match with Miz and Mizdow at the Rumble. You want Miz versus Mizdow.
Well, if you do the heel turn, I think you do it in January then. I don't think you do it on Sunday.
So do it on television, you mean?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Wouldn't make much sense on TLC. They're pushing more with the Naomi thing. It has nothing to do with any dissension between the team.
We'll see. We'll see where it all leads. Or you know what could be? You know what would be interesting? It would tie this all together?
What?
If you had Mizdow secretly doing stuff the Miz didn't know about with Naomi to get Jimmy mad at him to kick Miz's butt.
Maybe. It's interesting.
It's a neat little angle you could do. I don't know if the WWE is on that level of thinking, though. But
they're not clever anymore.
But, you know, that would be a clever way to do it. And Mizdow is kind of how the Miz thinks he's the puppet master of Mizdow. It's actually Mizdow being the puppet master of the Miz.
Mind blown.
Very good, eh?
Not bad, man.
That's not too bad. But this show is going to be bad.
You want to hear bad?
Let's get through it.
You want to hear bad, James?
Let's get through it.
A chairs match between Ryback and Kane. My God. Burn my brain now.
Steroid guy versus guy I want to retire. Here's what I would like to see. Both of them hit each other with a steel chair, knock each other out for a double 10 count, and then end the match. Thank you.
This all happened in the first 30 seconds, too.
Oh, yeah. We don't have time for this.
There's been some really bad matches throughout the course of the year, and this match might not be a train wreck like me and you think it's going to be, but I hate Ryback. I hate Kane. I'm so over both of them. Ryback was like the focal point of Raw's.
The odds, forget about who wins or loses this match. The odds someone gets injured in this match, extremely high.
Extremely
high. You know, get the Z-Packs ready for this match. Whoa, did I say that? Yeah, I did.
Whoa, we went there today.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that meme's going around there every time someone gets injured. I saw it last night for Sami Zayn. I saw it for Kevin Owens. It seems any time the WWE, someone gets hurt, get the Z-Pack is going to be the standard line for a while.
So Ryback's going to win with the GTS, and there. That's my prediction.
Oh, yeah, not with the GTS, he's not.
Sure, what the hell? He's going to do some punk moves. He's doing the running knee into the corner, a bulldog. A flying elbow. He'll point his arms to the sky. Salute Savage.
Where is this train wreck pay-per-view, by the way?
Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland.
So Cleveland. So kind of a smarky town, right?
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
They like their Dolph Ziggler, though. I don't think they like the Miz, even though they are in Cleveland. But the reception for Ryback, what do you think? Because he's kind of skated through so far with what CM Punk's had to say, but we haven't really been in a town that's really snarky. At the pay-per-view, does he really hear it from the CM Punk fans?
It'll be humdrum at best. I think people just don't care enough to chant at Ryback. I think there might be some fans who might chant CM Punk at him. That would be cool, but I don't think they're going to overly boo him. He still has some supporters right now.
It would just be funny if they actually chanted for Kane. cheered for Kane against Ryback.
I hope they don't, because Vince McMahon's going to take that.
Yeah, he'd actually take that seriously. Kane's over again. Oh my God!
We'll put the mask back on him.
Yeah, he can be the top heel to feud with Roman Reigns after he beats Brock Lesnar in WrestleMania.
Screw Cena's going to lose, and then Lesnar and Kane at the Royal Rumble.
Oh my God!
Dear God.
That was terrible.
I hate all this.
I apologize. We're having fun today, though. Steve Carino's a fun guy. He's our guest. We're having fun. What the hell? Anyway, on to the next one, Chris Walder.
Our Cleveland's own Dolph Ziggler, and what will probably be one of the best matches of the night because Dolph Ziggler is involved. He challenges Luke Harper in a ladder match for the WWE Intercontinental Championship.
Okay, we're in Cleveland, which should obviously mean the WWE should obviously give Dolph Ziggler his moment after he had a huge moment at Survivor Series. It all makes sense. So guess what's going to happen?
Harper goes over.
Exactly. Because the WWE never likes to give anyone their moment in their hometown. They're weird like that. I don't know why. It's simple. It's smart. Go back and look at the match where Trish Stratus retired and tell me what the downside is of having your babyface win in their hometown.
It's so rare. Everyone gets squashed. That's like it's the Jim Ross way of booking. If he was ever in Oklahoma, you knew he was going to get stunnered or pedigreed, or he was going to have to kiss Vince McMahon's ass.
Well, it wasn't Jim Ross's idea, so I don't think it should be called Jim Ross booking. I think it's Vince McMahon's booking of JR.
That's just my silly name for it. But Jim Ross was the first victim, and that trend has continued ever since. So, but you know what? Since the WWE IC title is such a bloody hot potato, and it seems to be bouncing around month by month, I'm going to go with the upset. I think the trend is going to stop on Sunday with Dolph Ziggler. He won the bloody main event at the last pay-per-view, and for him to lose to Harper, it wouldn't make a lick of sense to me. I think Ziggler climbs the rungs and becomes Intercontinental Champion.
You silly goose. You really think the WWE's following up on stuff? Need I remind you of Antonio Cesaro winning some Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal?
That wasn't the main event of a pay-per-view.
It was a big deal, though, and what happened to him?
He's
Swiss. Oh, that's right. He's Swiss.
Swiss boys.
That's right. He's Swiss. He has no charisma, and he's a millennial. He's not on this card either, by the way, is he?
He wasn't even on Raw.
No. So anyway, Steve Austin, you got to do some more work on that.
Do some more podcasts. Get to Vince, man.
Yeah, I think Steve Austin should come back as his manager.
They kind of look alike.
I mean, that may be the only way Cesaro's getting over at this point.
If Austin is his manager?
Yes, I think that's the only way to do it.
Oh, God. Because quite the alliance.
Vince can't say that Stone Cold doesn't have charisma, right?
Well, it's so hard to book a guy to get over with the fans when you're just constantly having him lose over and over and over. I think someone pointed out to me that Cesaro, since winning the Battle Royal, has one victory on pay-per-view.
In fact, let's take this further. Stone Cold, as Cesaro's manager, he instantly forgoes American beer. He drinks Heineken's now. He's refined. He drinks his beer in a glass, not in the stupid cans. It'd be great.
Puts his pinky in the air. And listen, I'm not hating on Heineken. I love me some Heineken. You're making me want to go out and get a beer tonight.
Well, I'm just saying, like we've got to change the Stone Cold character to reflect the Europeanness of Cesaro.
Because we know Austin's coming back. For this purpose alone, the CM Punk match is out the door.
Well, he might as well. I mean, that's the only way he's going to get this poor guy over. I mean, he's showing him moves. Like, Stone Cold clearly is invested in Cesaro getting over.
Totally.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, he's got to go all the way with this. Screw Redneck Island. You've got to come back and manage Cesaro.
We'll be seeing that for the next few months. Just Cesaro on Raw each and every week, begging Austin to come back and show him the ways. I'm not a Paul Heyman guy anymore. I'm a Steve Austin guy.
The night after WrestleMania, Stone Cold comes out and says, "Damn it, I've had enough. Vince McMahon, you will not get behind this man, but I will." And well, take him to the top.
He's not doing us Europeans proud, but one that is, a little bit anyways, Rusev, the United States champion.
Oh, yes, our babyface European.
European, yeah, he's getting over, but he's defending against Jack Swagger for some reason. Didn't we just do this a couple of months ago?
Yeah, but now Rusev allegedly broke Zeb Coulter's leg and damaged him to the point that he can no longer return to wrestling, managing. So
my DeLorean is broken. When I wanted to go back in the future, I didn't want to go back to friggin' SummerSlam to see Rusev and Jack Swagger again.
Yeah, I really don't get what the point to this is. I just don't, because, I mean, Jack Swagger's not winning. Like, everyone knows that.
He better not win. That's all I'm saying.
Everyone knows that. That's not happening. So why are we having this match?
I don't, because there's no other Americans to throw in his way. They've literally run through the entire roster
like,
now.
Like, I would even say, if you're going to have to, like, backtrack like this, okay, at least make it a four-way. Get all the guys that Rusev is beating on. Let's see, you know, we'll get Rusev versus Swagger versus Big E versus... Who's some other guys he feuded with?
Big Show, Mark Henry.
Well, he can't do Big Show now. He's a
but
heel.
Then that's it, then.
Mark Henry's a heel, too. Zack Ryder's hurt. Anyway, the point was, if you could make it a multiple-man match, I might have a little more interest. And for the people that aren't, like, totally over-the-top smarks like us, they might actually believe Rusev could lose, because he wouldn't have to get pinned, right? So there would be
right.
that potential. He could still lose the title, but not, you know, lose that momentum he has without being pinned or losing.
Well, you know what? I think the writers probably had Sheamus slotted into this spot, but because of his injury, they kind of had to go with a desperation play, and Jack Swagger was probably that guy, because it would have made sense to do the Sheamus versus Rusev rematch. We never actually got a rematch, to my recollection.
You know what's funny?
What?
This is how little I think of Sheamus. I forgot he was even injured. I legitimately didn't even remember that.
Forgot he was on the roster.
Well, he's injured so often.
Yeah.
In my defense, he's always injured, it seems. If Rusev doesn't win this match, I don't know what the hell's going on.
No, he's losing at WrestleMania.
To John Cena.
Oh, God.
And
yeah,
John
maybe.
Cena will wave the American flag proudly.
Because he hasn't had enough WrestleMania moments.
Hulk Hogan will do the walker in and help John Cena and hit Rusev with the U.S. flag, keeping Rusev's babyface status, and Rusev will lose in... That'll be how it'll go down.
This is why you won't see WrestleMania in England or anywhere in Europe, because Rusev, who will probably be a monster heel by the time that happens, is going to be so over that it's going to backfire in a hurry. But
well, yeah. Hell, are they ever going to get the WWE Network in England by WrestleMania?
Yeah, get the network there first before you start talking about WrestleMania.
The poor people in England, like, my God, like, they just can't catch a break with this WWE Network thing.
Those poor bastards. But they'll be okay. They won't be missing much on TLC. But they will get it on Sky Sports, actually. So no big deal there. Two more matches. The two main events, I suppose. The first one being Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose, which was announced at Survivor Series. These two will go in the only TLC match of the night.
The only match I am even remotely interested in.
I'm interested in seeing Harper and Ziggler to see what they can do with ladders, but the result doesn't really matter to me. I'm curious to see who wins Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose, two guys who can't seem to win on pay-per-view to save their life these days, and we got the crappy finish at Survivor Series, so now there has to be a winner here. Nothing to grab...
not necessarily.
Are you
a hologram could appear and stop the entire match.
Who is?
A hologram could just appear in the middle of the ring and stop the entire match.
Friggin' Tupac hologram appears from the middle of the mat and just distracts Bray Wyatt and he gets spooked and walks off. I don't know, but I've been very disappointed with the whole build of this feud. It's kind of picked up the last few weeks with their promos, because of course you put a mic in either of their hands, it's going to be magic. But is it too little, too late? It is in my books. I'm not picking Dean Ambrose, because I've picked Dean Ambrose so many bloody times. He can't win on pay-per-view, more so than Bray Wyatt. At least Bray Wyatt pulls out one once in a while, so I'm going to play it safe. I think Wyatt wins. I still have this gut feeling that they're going to put somebody with him. I want there to be an alliance with Bray Wyatt and somebody else, whether it's like a Wyatt family-esque relationship or some sort of partnership. I think he needs it. I don't think he's strong enough right now to be on his own. Harper and Rowan are more than capable, because they're going to be hovering around the mid-card anyway. But with Wyatt, he's the main event guy.
Eric Rowan's too busy making wine. I'm sorry. He's not coming back.
And screw the big red name for him. Is that really going to be what he's going to be called from now on? Big Red Rowan?
You know,
I hate wrestling sometimes.
Let's see. Kane was the Big Red Machine for a long time.
Oh, yeah, exactly. We called Big Red. Oh, we no one will remember that we called Kane
Big Red. I like the gum, too. It's spicy, damn it.
It reminds me of that commercial from Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, when he was advertising Big Red. He's like, if you don't eat Big Red, then F you.
You know what would be funny?
What?
Could you imagine they actually had a Big Red spot with Big Red?
That would be hilarious.
I mean, hey, we've seen the WWE do worse if you're not believing us. I mean, remember Jerry Lawler after a heart attack plugging Sonic? yeah. Anyway, we have to pick a match. You picked...
I picked Bray Wyatt, yeah.
And I am picking Dean Ambrose. I believe in Dean, and Dean is crazy. And he's got, like, some kind of Back to the Future now ambulance. I think this could be in his favor.
Yeah, what the hell's with that ambulance? Is that, like, his...
Well, I mean...
Yeah,
that's exactly what the internet thought of it. They thought, they instantly went to the cheap RVD humor, and RVD was there that night, so it kind of worked.
Did he get 420 miles to the gallon?
Might be.
Oh,
wow. These jokes are getting bad. Anyway,
they're not getting bad. They are bad.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just trying to be nice. You're my co-host. Anywho, so we're split on that one. I got Dean. You got... Bray, and on to our main event, which, okay, let's sort this one out again. John Cena, oh my God, is the number one contender. Seth Rollins, who already has his own shot at the belt, regardless. he wants to stop John Cena from being the number one contender because obviously it would be so much easier to beat Brock Lesnar to become champion. So he's going to try and put John Cena through a table. How am I doing?
Hashtag wrestling is weird sometimes, man.
No, it's just wrestling needs to think logically. And in this match, there is no logic. I don't understand this.
They needed a stipulation to make you care about this match in the first place, because Team Cena won at Survivor Series. What else do you really need to see between Cena and Rollins? And now they have the number one contendership with Cena being up for grabs. He's not losing this match. The plan is at the Royal Rumble.
I think what should have happened is the stipulation should have been equaled out. And it shouldn't have had to do with Cena being the number one contender, because I got a stipulation that would have taken care of it anyway.
And that's what?
Cena loses, the authority's back in power. Seth Rollins loses, he loses all the authority, the remnants of it, because the authority's still around, it's just missing the top two figures. So, no more J&J Security, no more Kane, no more Big Show, no more whoever the hell's still hanging around there. And there's your equal feud. Have a tables match.
Yeah, you know what? That would have. I don't know if it would have. That wouldn't have been logical either, just because Cena, he's the one with all of the power. So how does that stipulation even come to be?
Well, because if Cena doesn't do it, then Seth Rollins is always going to have all these flunkies, and he's going to make Cena's life a hell. And, you know, this is the way he has to conquer all the bad guys.
I'm sure Cena really cares that he's being tormented by Joey Mercury and Jamie Noble right now.
No, but you know what I mean. It's like that superhero logic. You can't just, you know, knock off the one bad guy. Like, you can't just beat the Joker and leave the Penguin and the Riddler out there running amok. You can't do that. You got to beat all the bad guys.
High five for the Batman reference there. But, I mean... It's a tables match. I honestly don't think that this is going to be the main event on Sunday. I think with a TLC match, have Ambrose and Wyatt.
Dean and Ambrose. It should be. Like, this is one of those ones, just like with Seth and Dean. I think it needs to be the one way, and we'll see if they do it. But
there hasn't been a really good tables match since the Dudleys and Hardys era.
Yeah, actually, just going back to that interview I promoted with Jericho and Dean Ambrose. That decision for that match made the day of during the day.
For what match?
to decide which match would go on last, either Orton and Cena or the Rollins-Ambrose cage matches, like Hell in the Cell.
Really?
Yeah, during the day. Dean said he found out officially 6 o'clock the day of the show.
Goes to show about WWE. They think on the spot, no long-term booking at all. They don't even know what match they're going to have to close the show until
yeah.
the day of the pay-per-view. That's not good.
I mean, that's the way things roll there, I guess. Anyway, so who's winning this thing?
Cena.
Yeah, I think John Cena. That you know, light-haired baby-faced kid that, you know, he's going to get to face Brock Lesnar one more time.
This is a special moment, James. This is our last pay-per-view preview of 2014.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Oh, come on! I'm being sentimental here!
There's nothing sentimental about this.
The year is coming to a close in another couple of weeks.
If you had told me we talked about the last pay-per-view for ROH, that might have made me sentimental.
Okay, fine.
No more Young Bucks, no more Adam Cole.
You know what, James? No. My heart is large with Christmas joy, and yours is just full of coal and naughty presents and stuff.
Naughty presents? That was weird, Walter.
My wording sucked there.
Yeah.
The Christmas spirit has taken my vocabulary.
your Christmas spirit apparently is a little bit, well, we don't want to talk about that here.
I've been dipping into the eggnog, James.
Apparently, something. I don't know.
Eggnog, clearly.
that's what Conan calls Caribbean eggnog, by the way.
What does he call it?
Caribbean eggnog.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so sipping in the Caribbean eggnog, Chris Walder.
It's a decent holiday drink, folks. You're missing out.
Yeah, apparently.
But you're seeing the effects of it now, so maybe
yeah,
well,
Walder, we're trying to wrap this show up, you know. I don't
like
know.
Like a Christmas present.
I don't know if you're aware. So we both have John Cena. The only reason I wouldn't pick John Cena is, does Paul Heyman get involved in this match?
I don't think so.
I'm wondering, because they actually, Paul Heyman was around for that terrible show that was Raw this week, and had some interactions with Seth Rollins, and I just wonder if Paul has a rooting interest in this match.
You want a bold prediction for 2015? I think Seth Rollins is going to be the next Paul Heyman guy. I think, and it won't hurt him like it has other mid-carders like Cesaro and Axel, because Rollins is
well, Brock
now.
Will be gone.
Exactly. So who do you put with Paul Heyman? Seth Rollins seems to be a man without a ship right now or whatever, without a captain. So
here's the thing, though. Does what? Paul even want to hang around if Brock's gone?
Maybe. I mean, he's kind of invested in it now, no? He's made more appearances than Brock has over the last year. So.
Oh, I understand that. But the goal and motivation of his return was Brock Lesnar, and then it became, well, his buddy CM Punk, and then Brock again, but now both of these guys will be off in the UFC, and the last time Brock was in the UFC, Paul Heyman was always around, and part of that whole entourage for Brock, or, well, not that Brock has a huge entourage, but he was part of that in UFC, so I wonder if Paul Heyman sticks around. That would be a big question as well.
Well, that's a story that has yet to be written.
Nope.
As we head into the new year.
So there you go. But I like the idea. Like Seth Rollins and Paul Heyman, I think it's a great pairing.
It's a good idea, but we don't know. It's still a lot of wrestling to be had, James. When TLC especially, it's not happening on Sunday. I don't think Paul Heyman's going to show up.
Okay, this is it. Chris Walder, have had too much eggnog. this podcast is officially over. If you watch TLC, we don't endorse that you do, but, you know, Godspeed to you, and keep warm and safe in this holiday season. We thank Steve Corino, we thank the folks of Ring of Honor who have been extremely great to us for all this road to Final Battle and kind of the post to Final Battle here with Mr. Corino. We appreciate that. It's been great working with them, and you know, they're the company, as a few people mentioned, that they do the pro wrestling thing, not the sports entertainment stuff. The sports entertainment stuff, I don't know. I'm not exactly sold on it. It's not exactly doing well for me, Chris Walder.
Wrestling isn't dying. It's just WWE that seems to be on life support, because a lot of other companies right now are finding success, like Ring of Honor, right, like NXT, like the Pro Wrestling Guerrillas of the world. So if you like wrestling, you don't have to necessarily succumb to Monday Night Raw for 3 hours every week. There are options out there. So keep an eye out and support good professional wrestling, because it does exist.
You set me up to end this show fittingly with an Adam Cole reference, because the next PWG show is called Black Cole Sun.
And now this is the part of the podcast where you play the song.
Black Cole Sun? No, I'm not playing that.
Ah, damn.
But maybe we'll play Adam's bumper on the way out. I don't know. We'll do something. But we're done. Happy holidays, folks. Don't kill each other going Christmas shopping and all that jazz. Remember, the holidays, it's stressful, but at the end of the day, the calendar is going to get to December 25th, whether you're ready or not. So just chill out, have fun, and drink better eggnog than Chris Walder's drinking, because clearly it's affected his mind.
Happy holidays, everybody.
The cream of the crop. Nobody does it better.
More questions.
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye.